We're all in uncharted territory looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
This is the best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
Golic and Wingo with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. We're also on Sirius XM Channel 80 and your smart speakers. Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. It's been a very tumultuous week in the country and the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd by that Minneapolis police officer. And we'll have much more on what happens in the court case going forward, but in the court of public opinion and in the court of outrage, so much is being played out in front of our very, very eyes across so many cities in this country where people are saying enough. We've had enough, and it's time for everyone to say either you are with or against, and standing by the wayside is no longer an option. And we've sort of seen a torrent of statements and information come out, and a lot of people were waiting for one specific person to say something, and that would be Dabo Swinney, the head football coach at Clemson University, arguably with the success he's had over the last 4 years, the most prominent voice in college athletics because of the revenue and the interest and the eyeballs that college football brings, and with the national championships that he has at the expense of Nick Saban in Alabama, a lot of people were wondering and waiting for Dabo Swinney to make a statement on what's going on across the country. And he did. And all of this is time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. So here is the first part of Dabo Swinney in a Zoom call on his reaction to what's going on and what sparked with the killing of George Floyd.
What I know as I, you know, approach everything from a perspective of faith is that where there are people, there's going to be hate. There's going to be racism and greed and jealousy and crime and so on, because we live in a sinful, fallen world. And we've had so much bad news. Everywhere you turn, there's bad news. But really today, I just wanted to take a moment and offer some good news. And for me, the good news is that we have a Lord that loves us all and that has conquered already. And that we all have a choice as to how we think, how we love, how we respond, and how we forgive.
So that was his initial comment.
I let me ask it this way. What are we expecting? You know, so let me first go back to 2016.
Yeah.
With the Colin Kaepernick when he took a knee in that situation, how some people, including Dabo Swinney, reacted. Go ahead.
No, it's like he actually addresses that in.
Okay.
Yeah. So do you want to do that, or do you want to?
Read the comments first, and then we can hear his reaction.
Yeah. He had said at that point, back in 2016, he totally disagrees with what Kaepernick did in protesting. Two wrongs don't make a right. I just think there's a right way to do it. I don't think that was the right way. He went on to say, I hate to see what's going on in this country. I really do, because I think this is a good world. I think this is a great country. It's just the things that get painted with a broad brush in this world these days. I think a lot of the things in this world, not everything is so bad. This world is falling apart. And then the thing he got called to task for, he said, some of these people need to move to another country. Some of these people need to move to another country.
Right. And so then, obviously, when this Zoom call came in, he was asked about those statements and specifically that line.
Well, that was probably a harsh statement for sure, but I still believe in the good of people. I just, as a person of faith, I believe in that. And I do believe that we have lots of problems for sure, but I still think we have the best country in the world. And it's up to us to make it better. It's up to us to create the positive change that we want to see in this world.
All right, so all of this is Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. This is the interesting thing with Dabo, because I'm with you, Dad. What do we expect of all these college coaches? Right. Well, we expect them to be molders of young people. Right. That is what college athletics tell us that these people are. And so I think in a lot of this situation, and we'll have Arike Ogunbowale on with us later, former Notre Dame star, now WNBA star, who tweeted yesterday and said, high school athletes, pay attention to who is saying what from your college coaches, because you're going to learn who's really for you and what's not. And that seems to be what this is now, everyone taking stock of, all right, what do you really think? And I think that's why we've gotten into this weird dance of everyone looking to see what statement you put out, because everyone, especially the black community, wants to know who is for us and who is not right now.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what's going on here. And what Dabo was able to do was really not say much of anything behind what he believes in his faith and all that. Like, all of that was very noncommittal, right?
Yeah.
Now, what you hear from Clemson fans and people that defend Dabo are saying, well, look what he does every day. Look what he does behind closed doors. Look at the way he tries to elevate the lives of the athletes, the predominantly black athletes that are a part of his football team. And all of those things are valid, but we're not asking Dabo to weigh in on the lifetime of what he does or what he has, done to benefit his players. You talk to plenty of guys that have played for Dabo Swinney and Clemson. They will all sing his praises as a man who has meant a lot to their lives and their development as men and all of the things that we expect from college coaches. What we are asking in this situation was a response to a specific instance, right?
Yes.
A specific issue in a lot of this. But Monty Jones summed this up really well, I thought, yesterday. He said, my take on Dabo when it comes to race and the likes has always been pretty consistent. I understand how a poor white man who somehow parlayed meager physical talents into playing for Bama and worked his way to being the top college coach can't believe that America ain't great. He's a man who overcame legitimate obstacles. I mean, he and his mother shared a bed when they started college, and believes that this country and his savior did for him can also be done for you if you just work as hard as Dabo. And he went on to say, that's why it's difficult to explain ideas like white privilege to someone who looks around and doesn't see any privilege in the way that he came up. Dabo, you can't find a spot in his childhood where he would believe that there was what we traditionally think of as privilege in all of this.
Right. And the other part of this, which is interesting, going back to his 2016 comments, when he went on and said move to another country and all that kind of stuff, talking about Colin Kaepernick taking the knee, he invoked the words of Martin Luther King, and that was sort of interesting because what Colin was doing was a peaceful, nonviolent protest, which is exactly what Martin Luther King was about. So for him to use that and then say he didn't agree with what Colin was doing, literally those two things cannot coexist.
Well, again, I think people... their issue was doing it at a football game. Yeah, we want revisionist history. I get what you're saying, because they all felt it was against the flag or against the military when it wasn't. So
it
that was
just,
I know it wasn't, but people think it was. So that's the difference. They know it was a peaceful protest. They just think it was against the wrong thing when they had no idea, quite honestly. I guess my point is, what's the expectation? What do we expect from guys like Dabo Swinney? Because is it more to get a statement from them or to actually ask the African-American players who played for him? They all love him, right?
I guess I'm saying those things can exist at the same time, because what we're asking you to do is the easiest thing in the world right now. Denounce the obvious killing of an unarmed black man. Denounce racism at its core. Like, those are all, like, this is the easy part right now. The statements, and that's why we've sort of said, it's kind of weird that we demand it, but it's the bare minimum that you can do because it's a layup right now. That's why we're going to laugh at the Knicks in a little bit,
because they
continue to do the most Knicks thing possible in every situation. But I guess that's the thing for me, is you're being asked in this situation to come out and denounce what everyone, regardless of what letter comes before your title on the political news network that you so choose to watch, everyone has denounced the instance that happened here. So it seems pretty easy. And when someone... it doesn't address it head on, I guess that's when people start to raise an eyebrow.
I guess the best way to answer that question, and it's a fair question to ask, is to listen to somebody else, right? Here's PJ Fleck, the Minnesota football coach, head coach. We've had him on the show before. This was him talking about how this experience and his reaction to what happened to George Floyd and how he's dealing with that and his players.
This week, I've told our football team, I'm a 39-year-old white Caucasian male. I'm not your head football coach. You tell me, you call me, I'm here to listen. Too many times as a head coach, we want to talk and talk and talk and talk, and we get paid to talk, and we talk for a living. But this is a time to listen and to have empathy. and to be very real of what's going on with the social injustice around us.
I mean, to me, that was a statement.
It was. And you know what? The thing about this is, and Dad, I know what you're getting at, is you know what? That's a statement. I have no idea the actions in PJ Fleck's everyday life that reflect who he truly is, just the same way that I don't know Dabo Swinney like that, to be able to say this is what you do on a daily basis that's reflective of who you are in all this. It's just being asked to directly address a situation and whether you do or not do it. Now, the larger thing with Dabo is he has become the proxy for everything in college football because of the background with his comments on Colin back then, because of how he's weighed in on pay for play in the past. He is now a lightning rod because he is super successful and because he's weighed in on these other issues in a way that people have already disagreed with. So part of it is people hunt Dabo's opinion in these things.
Correct.
The other part of it is, this is what happens when you're on top. People immediately look to you in all this.
I guess that is the point. People are going to look to him, and he even said, if I speak, I get criticized. If I don't speak, I get criticized. So basically, when he hadn't put out a statement, he said the reason why, I needed to form my thoughts. I'm not on social media, so it's not like I was going to put it out on Twitter. I needed to form my thoughts, just as I said before, because if I talk, I get criticized. If I don't talk, I get criticized. But what he says is very... very cookie cutter, right? There's no teeth in there. It is, I guess that's the point. Are you looking for that? And if you don't get that, so now what's the thought of Dabo Swinney?
I don't think it should be any different than it was before. Like I think in this instance, we get what we've always gotten from Dabo, which is Dabo goes back to his faith with all these things because, again, as Bomani pointed out, that's the only mark, like that's what succeeded in his life. All of the things that got him from the place where he was going through hell when he was in his young life and the story that we've heard of his success through all this, the thing that's just surprising in all of this is that can be true and those things can. America and his faith can have saved Dabo certainly, but he's still been exposed to all these different perspectives. Right. As a player and as a coach, he's been around the African-American community. He's been around black players, I assume, over the line of that. Like us, he's heard their story. And there's room for the different experiences of people in America to be true and for your faith in America to still have been things that allowed you to succeed. Like, there's room for that to be a part of the conversation. It just doesn't make it the rule. It doesn't mean that everybody can succeed in that same way, in the same way you did, when we know there are vastly different experiences for everyone in this country.
Yeah, that's actually the whole thing, right? There are many ways to get to a certain place, and you have to appreciate the paths that others have taken. And I think maybe that's part of this conversation, and that's why what Arike Ogunbowale, what she put up there was so great. And the point she's making is, and the point that you made earlier is that players now are more cognizant of these things than they were before. And they want to say, where are you on these things? Because these are things that have genuine interest to them. And I think that's going to be something that every coach is going to have to deal with, because there are players now that are coming out that want to know these kind of things. It's not just, yes, coach, no, coach, go play ball. They want to know where you stand on a lot of different things.
So Arike Ogunbowale, again, will join us. And what she said was basically, and others have said it, listen to these coaches or listen to them not say anything, you high school players, and put that into your memory banks when you're picking a college. Do you think this is going to cost guys? Do you think it'll cost Dabo Swinney players? Do you think it's going to Coach K players?
No. So, and I think this is the interesting part of that is I think the answer is unequivocally no.
I don't think it is either.
But I think other coaches may.
Yes.
They're a representation of what Arike pointed out. Do more research on the person that's coaching you in a lot of these instances, because it's not going to affect Dabo because he's got the golden ticket. If you go to Clemson and play defensive line, chances are you're going to play in the NFL.
Right.
If you go to Clemson and play quarterback right now, chances are you're going to, like, that program is in a place where it's a kingmaker and all this. And Dabo's got the receipts. Like, again, he's got players that say, this is a person and a man that we trust that was part of our development in a positive way. In the most part, I don't want to speak for many, but for the guys I've talked to, they overwhelm sing Dabo's praises in a lot of these instances. And so I don't think he's going to lose, because people know by and large who Dabo is behind the scenes and what he means to them. But for other coaches, it is going to be an idea and a reminder to kids that are making that choice. Look into the person that is coaching you, because college athletics in general are littered with coaches that aren't great people.
Yeah,
like,
very
that's
true.
That's a reality, but it all gets ignored for the sake of winning. And so maybe now you've got a generation that's more cognizant of that.
By the way, former Clemson quarterback Taj Boyd is going to join us today in about 45 minutes. So we'll be interested to see what he has to say on all of this and his opinions on everything that is going on. Look, whether it's fair or unfair, we're looking for the statements to check the box.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
I mean, that's what it is at this point, because as Dominique Foxworth, among many, said over the last couple of days, really, it's the bare minimum to make a statement at this point, is what happens afterwards and how committed you are to this thing going forward. And all of that is Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. And that leads us to the perplexing quandary that is always the Knicks, ladies and gentlemen. You know, the Knicks had been silent. And in an internal memo, not a statement, internal memo that James Dolan set out to MSG employees, basically said, "Hey, we're not saying anything because we're not really qualified to say anything."
That's literally what he told.
What he said.
As all the employees were wondering, is there going to be a statement from our company? You know, this is what James Dolan, again, internally, and we know anything internally usually becomes public, and this did. It was basically, yes, we're not making a statement because we're basically not qualified to make a statement. Here's the thing. If this was and let's be honest, a respected owner or CEO, what would the thought process be? And because it's James Dolan, who everybody in the world wants him to sell the teams that he has, because it's a mockery, it's all taken with an instant, man, they blew it again. But let me just throw it the other way. What if it's a CEO or an owner that is highly respected that put out an internal memo that said, you know what? We basically the same thing. We're not in the position, or we don't have the authority is the wrong word, to give an opinion on this, so we're going to stay out of it. Put it way more eloquently than I did. Well, how would it be received as opposed to a Dolan?
Well, I think everything is in context, right? Look, I've said this a million times, and you've heard it whenever we play Love It or Shove It. There is no vacuum where something just exists without everything else that you've gone on before it. So yes, that's a fair point, but that stuff matters. Like, that stuff around what James Dolan isn't or isn't saying about this particular situation matters, because it's the track record, it's the resume and everything else. And it's impossible to separate this one thing from everything else.
I guess it's just like, what qualifications do you need
to say that a death of a human being by the way that George Floyd died was horrible? That seems to be a pretty easy thing to say.
Well, but like, it's the cookie cutter thing. Like, right now, these statements, by and large, that come from organization aren't rewriting the record books for their like great ability to
eloquence.
To like drive change. Like, in most cases, as we said, it's the bare minimum. It's going out there and doing that. That's what makes this so, like, quite honestly, that's what makes it funny, is that, of course, the Knicks found a way to mess up doing the bare minimum.
So, again, this was in an internal memo, and part of it, we at Madison Square Garden stand by our values of respect and peaceful workplace. We always will, as companies in the business of sports and entertainment. However, we are not any more qualified than anyone else to offer our opinion on social matters. So, again, when it comes from Dolan, we're like, boy, they find a way to blow it.
We laugh more because it's the Knicks.
Yeah.
We would be disappointed if it was anyone who said that.
Yeah.
I firmly believe that right now. We wouldn't, like, again, it wouldn't be as much part of a running joke. Like, remember when this first happened, we didn't hear from Adam Silver right away.
Right.
And no one questioned it because we know his track record.
Because it was Adam Silver.
And then we saw the internal memo that reflected all the things that you would expect Adam Silver would say in that. But we didn't need a statement from him right away because we know who Adam Silver is at this point. He's got the receipts to prove it. With James Dolan, I don't think even the best statement was necessarily going to undo years of him doing done with the Knicks. But again, the whole confluence of events with this one just makes it a lot funnier, because this was the easy part. And, of course, the Knicks found a way to mess up the easy part.
It's that last line. As companies in the business of sports and entertainment, however, we are not any more qualified than anyone else to offer our opinion on social matters. It's an opinion. Literally everyone has one.
Yeah.
And everyone's giving one. And your a large part of your business is a sports team in a league that has been very proactive on social matters. So, yeah, I would actually disagree completely with every line of that segment.
We had Myron Metcalf on yesterday, and he said, with all due respect, this is the easy part right now. Like, this is the easy part. It's trending right now. It's the easy statement to make in all of this.
Take the layup, for lack of a better
term. It is the easy thing. It's going to be going forward, as where I'm sure we'll discuss in the coming days, weeks, months, you know, that now what happens, what is next. But it did. It just, you remember, like, oh my God, there's the Knicks. There's the Knicks.
Wow. Yeah. Meet the Knicks. Wow.
Golic and Wingo presented by Progressive Insurance. Quoting home insurance just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy all online at progressive.com. All right, coming up, excuse me, we'll continue to have these conversations, and we will continue to hear from those who are actually making statements and helping bring our country together, plus much more on what could be the road forward for Major League Baseball. We'll get to all of that. ESPN Radio and ESPN2, we are Golic and Wingo.
Golic
and Wingo.
And Wingo.
Mm-hmm. Trey Wingo and Mike Golic Sr., that we're delighted to be joined by our ESPN baseball analyst, Doug Glanville. Doug, thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate your time. First and foremost, on the sports side of things, are you optimistic now that we actually might get a baseball season in?
I've been optimistic. You know, you recognize the times we're in, what we're facing. And baseball has experienced 25 years of labor peace since 1994-95. And so if you can get it done in that environment, when you look at the social implications of not getting it done at this point, it seems like they'd figure out a way to do that. It's a negotiation. And although publicly it comes off as a pure fight in the ring, the reality is they all know what's at stake here. They understand the opportunity. They also understand that certain things need to be put aside in their history. So it's going to be back and forth and get closer. The owners tend to, you know, focus maybe on the bottom line. The players have been focused on the structure, but somewhere in the middle, there's ground to work off of. And each time they go back and forth and get a little closer, then it creates more optimism.
So there's the sides of, for players, is there going to be enough games the owners want to play that's going to make it worth our while? If you're still playing and you're in on these phone calls with the union, what's that number of games at a prorated salary where you are comfortable saying, yes, I want to go do this?
Yeah, well, I think the most that's possible, quite frankly. I think the negotiation is going to be seen in that light. If they can play as many games as possible, that's important. I mean, at a certain point, it's also just about how the playoffs are going to work. Are you going to play a 20-game schedule and then go into the World Series? So you know that the more games, the better. And they recognize that the most important aspect of it from the players is the structure. If you're saying, okay, you're going to earn what we committed to contractually per game, then there's not a loss in the sense of the structural side. Yeah, there might be loss in the dollar amount, but at least you're on par to jump off from that point to whatever you go to when 2021 comes around and you have to renegotiate a collective bargaining agreement. So you want to hand this off in the best shape possible for the future. And a lot of that does involve structure as opposed to sort of the bottom line numbers of it to the players.
Doug, I'm curious because you mentioned that this has been negotiation. You've been optimistic this whole time. Has there been any part of the way that this has gone down that surprised you?
Well, not so much. I mean, historically, there's been often the first proposal out in the public domain. So I came up Phillies and Cubs, and that was my primary years as a major leaguer. And I was a player rep in all those scenarios. And I was also on the executive subcommittee with Don Fehr, who was the executive director at the time. And then you didn't have sort of the social media and all this going around. So Fehr recognized that he wasn't going to win a battle in the court of public opinion when you're going back and forth over dollars. They had to kind of keep. So we kept a lot in-house, argued the law, and kept the constituents, the players, informed. That was his strategy. And it worked well because we didn't have this wildfire of opinions going every different direction. So I think there's still an element of this. Okay, you know, the owners may be able to play a certain way publicly, but we have to still just get our ducks in a row and make sure we're united. That has been a successful strategy since the dawn of the Major League Baseball Players Association. And so that's pretty predictable. We're just in unpredictable times and uncertain times. And so although the old playbook may be applied, they recognize the bottom line and where they need to get to is to figure out how to play baseball in 2020, no matter what.
Doug Glanville with us, our baseball analyst. Now, listen, not that we're cynical here, Doug, but in March we had talked about prorated salaries for as many of the games being played, potentially as much as half a season. The baseball players propose 114 games. The owners counter with 50 games.
Well, they didn't officially counter. Yeah, that number is just floated
out there. Yes. Right. And, of course, the difference, you split the difference between 114 and 50 is 82. And if we get there, it feels like this whole thing has been an exercise in futility.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, you never know what – you can't get away from the habit of is the other side going to fold and is it going to lean our direction? I mean, it's a longstanding history. But keep in mind, you know, I came up and when I got to be a veteran in Philadelphia, Chase Utley came up and became the star he is. And he had an entire career and a great one at that where he didn't have labor dispute when it came down to stoppage. I mean, that's where we are. That's unprecedented because historically, as a player, you always have work stoppage. That's how you advance the ball. So you're always in this rhythm and dance between owners, players, back and forth to see what can be, you know, received, so to speak, in the last minute. But they know what's at stake here. And look, safety, that's going to be number one in when it all is said and done. And it's going to dictate everything on what's even possible. So you try to forecast, well, the game might not happen. The World Series might happen in October. Who knows? There's still tons of uncertainty. So from the player's standpoint, they want to make sure as many games are on the books as possible. But we know that overall, we're still out of control as to what really may happen if things shift in our health crisis.
Doug Glanville joining us. And so while we're all hoping for baseball to be back, we all think it will be. We also know there's a hell of a lot more important things going on in this world, Doug. With what happened to George Floyd when he was killed, and now all the protests that are going on, you're hearing athletes being involved in protests and putting out statements and such. What has been your overall view as you have gone through this the last few days?
I mean, it's overwhelming. It's transformational. It's scary. It's everything. And you know, my background, I touch on a lot of these challenges that we face in our country. A lot of them. Obviously being black man in America, obviously playing professional sports, but also my history through sports comes through police. The volunteer officer that was my coach in summer leagues was a detective in the Teaneck Police Force. And my introduction to law enforcement was through baseball. And I felt fortunate when I look back because I had a positive experience from the beginning and I had access to law enforcement early on to humanize. And what we're missing often in that relationship is the humanization and seeing each other in the same light. And I fortunately had the privilege to be able to have that access. My father was a psychiatrist and he worked often with police officers locally. And so I understood early on what the stresses were. And so that my life came through that lens. And then when a lot of my teammates that summer became officers and retired recently, I saw them as friends and family. Many people don't have that experience. And especially we talk about communities of color, where this tendency of a disproportionate police presence and all the, you know, being criminalized and stop and frisk and all these things, then you create a very tense relationship. And it doesn't matter. Like I played Major League Baseball. I was on a call on all these, and Zoom with all these amazing former players. And we recognize that when the uniform comes off, even more so than it already is, it's scary. I've had a number of incidents I could list in the last 5 to 6 years that made me fearful of my life and fearful of certain consequences. And my reactions matter. So one of the questions I asked them was about being 0 degrees of separation from George Floyd. And I think it's a deep thing to think about because although you have the privilege and wealth and you're a star and all these things, you see yourself in George Floyd as a black man. You see yourself. You see the possibilities of things going wrong, even when you're doing something mundane, like I was one day when I was shoveling my own driveway. So I think there's a reflection, and I think, and when we come down to it, we need to see each other in each other, no matter where our backgrounds or where we're coming from. But we have to address the structure that has sort of been built around this original belief that, you know, one group of people is superior to over another and has certain rights over them. And that's how our country was built to a large degree. So sports play a great role in this because as I fast forward in the story I was mentioning about the police, they came in droves to my father's funeral when he passed away because of his service to law enforcement. And we got a police escort to the burial site. They were there when I played Major League Baseball as my friends and teammates. throughout my entire career, looking out for my father when he was sick and my mom, who was a teacher in the school system. And I wish more people had that type of engagement back and forth to be exposed to people. So our country is as a wake up call in the middle of a pandemic. And it shows that we just have a lot of work to do. And sports at its best is that place where when I went to spring training and I was exposed to people I'd never met from all different backgrounds, we saw each other in each other. We saw the possibility because the team made you focus on the character and the work ethic and things that melt away a lot of our divisions, even if we go our separate ways when the season was over. If we get back to that at its core, that's a huge starting point, but we have to be involved and engaged. And sports can play a tremendous role in that, even though in itself it can't fix it. We have to do it together. And that's the only way it's going to work is I always remember this lesson. When I responded to what happened to me in my driveway, I said, well, look, you know, in the end, if we want law enforcement to change, we have to work with law enforcement. And it takes a certain understanding. And that's important. We have to all come to the table. So, you know, hopefully baseball sees that opportunity to get back and also help our country heal and move forward in a positive direction.
Well, just absolute eloquence and nothing less that I would expect from you. Doug, as always,
thanks, Doug.
We appreciate your time this morning. Be well, be safe. Thank you for your insights.
Okay, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night. Yeah. No doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day. What a show. What a time.
One, two, three, four.
Yeah, Enrique Ngumbawale tweeted yesterday, college coaches are really showing their true colors right now. High school athletes, please take note. Play for a coach that's truly invested in you as a person and not just as an athlete. It's tough to differentiate, but I think their actions or lack thereof right now is a strong telling. And so I thought it was a very interesting perspective.
Absolutely.
On this as we're seeing more and more athletes at that level comfortable with speaking their truth.
And Enrique Ngumbawale joins us now. Enrique, thanks for being with us this morning. First and foremost, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing well.
We're doing well. We appreciate it. And we're struck, for lack of a better term, by what you put out there. And I just wanted to know how much of that was part of your process when you were going through this. How much did that mean to you, knowing that you were going to play for people at Notre Dame, that you felt completely got what you were about and had your back?
Yeah, I think just that was probably one of the biggest things, and especially how I was raised and, you know, how protective my family is and how close we are. They wanted to know that where they were going to be sending me for 4 years and, you know, a prime time in my life to become a, you know, young woman and an adult, that I was going to be taken care of, and I felt comfortable. So that was definitely, you know, a big part of my process.
What made you feel so inclined to tweet that out yesterday, to get this message out to other athletes?
Just because I've just been seeing a lot of coaches make vague statements or make a statement on their not personal page, of course, but they'll go to the team page and say, on behalf of this, and it'll just be that. But, and I was looking at some coaches, like, I really respect Dawn Staley, and she said a lot of stuff on her page. Of course, Notre Dame, I said they all tweeted from their individual pages plus the Notre Dame page. And it's like, a lot of these schools have predominantly black, you know, athletes. They recruit all these black athletes. They want all these black athletes, but in times like this, they're not even speaking up or really protecting these girls. And they were just in their homes however many years ago saying they will, you know, help them grow, always have their back, blah, 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 blah. And they've been really quiet. So I feel like that's really important when you're about to send your daughter somewhere where you're looking for a school, is if times get rough, are they actually going to have your back like they say, or do they just want you because they know, you know, you're good at sports and you can help their program?
Do you need to hear something specific? Because there can be some statements that can be very mundane or very kind of middle of the road. Do you need, or are you telling these athletes you need to listen for certain cue words that would be more acceptable to understand who this coach is?
Yeah, I mean, it just, especially right now, like, just look at how they're talking, look at how they're speaking. Like, if they're talking, you know, like I said, really vaguely, just so they can put a statement on and say they've supported it, but they're not really getting to the root cause and they're not really speaking on it, like in their statements, then they're just trying to, you know, cover it and make sure, yes, I'm showing face and have a, you know, statement on social media that I support this, but do they even really know what's going on? Or is it just because their PR told them to make a statement, or do they actually really care and care to be like, well, and obviously a lot of these coaches are white too. So it's not like they're going through what's going on. Like, it's not like they're black. It's not like they get the same feelings every day. But I've seen a lot of statements, like my WNBA coach, he said, I've never had to experience this, and I know I won't, but then he gave a statement, you know, supporting it, supporting his experiences, other experiences of Black people that he knows. Like, you don't have to go through it in order to give a, you know, in-depth statement. Like, everybody knows what's going on, and if you try to act like you don't understand just because you're not Black, or you don't want to, you know, say too much just because you're not Black, then what does that mean? Because you have a lot of Black athletes that look up to you and listen to you every day.
Enrique Ngumbawale with us, former Notre Dame women's basketball player, current WNBA star. And Enrique, I'm curious, at Notre Dame, at the time that you were there, Muffet McGraw was the head coach. She is a white woman. Mm-hmm. Were these conversations that you guys as a team and with your coaching staff would have when issues would come up that you felt strongly about?
Oh, 100%. Like, and that's why I love Coach McGraw so much. Like, even before me, she's always advocated for, you know, women, people of color. Like, equality is her biggest thing. So, like, I'm sure right after this happened in practice, we probably, not basketball, we would have went into the team room and just sat and talked about this. Everybody would have got their feelings out. Like, that's the kind of thing she does, and she would probably just listen to us. She'll give, you know, what she has to say. All the coaches will give their statements. Everybody would give how they feel, and we would actually sit there and dissect it and talk about it because, you know, things don't change, and people don't understand until you sit there and talk about it. And obviously, at Notre Dame, and Notre Dame women's basketball is always a diverse team, so we would have got viewpoints from everybody, and that conversation would have been really, really good. So, like, I know Coach McGraw would have been on top of that right away, and I missed that. But also, you know, I'm in WNBA, so my head coach, Brian Agler, we've been having Zoom meetings. Our Zoom meeting this week was nothing about basketball. Everybody just sat and talked, you know, what they're thinking about the world and how they feel. So it's definitely good to have coaches like that, that they're both white, but they understand that people want to talk about this and people have feelings about this.
Yeah, Enrique Ngumbawale with us. And I think that's the thing is the three of us is – white guys here.
Yeah.
One of the things that we've basically said, we want to listen. You know, we want to make sure we understand everything that goes on that is far different from our experiences. So as we go through this process now where we've had so many protests in so many places, what are the things that you were hopeful for that we'll get to at some point down the road after this?
I mean, hopefully, you know, I mean, I'm not a big fan of, like, the, you know, looting and, you know, messing up everybody's businesses. But obviously, you know, I, like, retweeted a statement of that MLK's son said, this is, like, the voice of the unheard. So definitely just hopefully things change and hopefully this is a big step and hopefully, you know, the system changes. And it's going to take a lot more than this, but I think there's a lot more notice, especially because of Corona. Everybody's at home. So I think there's a lot more people protesting that probably would be at work. So that's definitely just, if it were to happen, it's a good time to happen because the world's at a stop. And it was so blatantly on camera that, like, even I think more white people that would have not said something or saying something, because how can you say there's something wrong with this video? You're literally watching what happened on video. Like, it's not much to argue about. So hopefully this really, you know, starts a big change in, you know, the system.
One of the big changes that we've seen, and I'm really curious, of the four of us talking here, yeah, you were the most recent college athlete in the group. You were most recently a part of that time period and that time of your life. A lot of college athletes are speaking up right now in a way that certainly was not always the case when I was in school, and always seems like it's been a difficult battle just because of the way the power dynamic is in college sports. Did you see that change when you were in school? Is that something that's new to right now? Have you noticed a change in the way that college athletes are now approaching the way that they can be heard?
Yeah, I mean, I think just with this generation, like, we saw, you know, what happened to Trayvon Martin. We were probably, like, high school, and then we've just seen all these things where now we're older, we have platforms now, we're going to use it. Like, we've always wanted to speak out, we've been younger, but now that we're adults, nobody can really tell you what to say and what not to say. So I think, you know, all the younger kids that watch this stuff growing up, now that they, you know, can speak about it and have a platform, everybody's just, you know, saying what they have to say. And I know I love that. And then, so I think our generation is definitely going to, you know, help this, because we're really not afraid to say what's on our mind.
That is God's honest truth. Honestly, it's not a moment too soon.
But it's a great point that when some of the other horrific things were going on, Enrique and others were very young,
yeah,
you know, and now,
right,
now
exactly,
older, and as you mentioned, adults that can finally start speaking up about us. Enrique, that's a great point. We appreciate you coming on and giving your point of view and based off your tweets about what high school athletes should look for in coaches. So very thoughtful. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate you for having me.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name? Check. Birthday? Social security? Is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
Golic and Wingo.
It was all sort of one big giant jello mold. It's very interesting where that went.
So with that in mind, we're delighted to be joined now by J.B. Bickerstaff, the Cleveland Cavaliers head coach. J.B., thanks for being with us this morning. First and foremost, how are you today?
Thank you guys for having me. We're doing pretty good, under the circumstances of everything that's going on. But my family is safe. My family's healthy. And now, we're looking to just push forward.
Well, it certainly feels like we're all trying to push forward at this point, albeit sometimes in very different ways. You and Colby Altman, released a joint statement after the killing of George Floyd. What was your conversation like with Colby when you were having those discussions about how to address this?
It was born out of frustration. It was born out of, a feeling of exhaustion that we seem to be going through this vicious cycle over and over and over again. And the frustration stemmed from, when these things happen, we always react. And, people are upset, people are enraged, there's protesting. And then it seems as if once the cameras stop rolling and another incident, takes over the media cycle, all this stuff dies down, and then we don't do anything again until the next time it happens. So our conversation became about what can we do to help prevent these things from happening instead of always being in a position where we're reacting. Kobe and I are very fortunate to be a part of a league like you guys were talking about that supports, civil rights and people being able to be themselves, and social justice. Kobe and I are also very fortunate to work for an organization that has been pushing for these types of objectives and inclusion before this, came to pass. You look at how many organizations in the pro sports world that do have a black general manager and a black head coach. So we are fortunate to be in the position that we're in. Our organization completely supported us. You guys saw, their statement on the heel of our statement. But now, instead of just talking, our organization has had many conversations, organization-wide from top to bottom about what we do next. And that's what, to me, is the most important thing is where do we go from here and, stop making statements and get into action.
I'm curious, as you mentioned, this being born out of frustration and this being a conversation that you and others and this league in the NBA has had continually. Is there anything about this time around, because I've heard other people that bring this up, that feels different, that feels like there might be more hope for what comes next?
Yeah, and it's just personally, I feel so much more encouraged by, the circumstances and the situation we're in when I'm listening to the voices of other people. And it's not just black people anymore who are, calling for change. The committee that we joined or that we started with the Coaches Association, the Committee on Racial Injustice and Reform, is filled with a diverse group of people. And the conversations that we had over the weekend informing, our plans moving forward and the actions that we're willing to take left me encouraged. There are some brilliant voices on those calls, you know, from Lloyd Pierce, you know, David Fizdale, Stan Van Gundy, Steve Kerr, Pop, Rick Carlisle, you know, Brett Brown, Quinn Snyder, you know, Doc Rivers. Like, I don't want to, you know, leave anybody out, but you go down the list and there are some brilliant people on those calls who are ready to do instead of just talking. And I sit there and I think about it. If it's just, you know, if there's that many brilliant minds just from our small circle, and I look at all the other people and all the other, you know, organizations and people in positions of leadership, if they do the same thing, if they just bring their minds and their intelligence and their will to the cause, think of all the things that we can accomplish. And it's going to take the people to get it done. You know, I think that's first and foremost is every single one of us, it's time to play our part. You know, get off the sidelines, get in the game, and wherever you're comfortable. You don't have to do, you know, these huge undertakings. You know, the conversations you have with your family, the conversations you have with your kids, you know, those are all things that we're all capable of doing that can impact change that we're looking for.
J.B. Bickerstaff joining us, Cleveland Cavaliers head coach, and again, the National Basketball Coaches Association formed this committee to the Committee on Racial Injustice and to Reform to Pursue Solutions within NBA cities. So, Coach, listen, you're saying, and other people are starting to say it as well, there are protests out there, you know, and I know we absolutely want to lean toward the peaceful protests. There are statements from everybody out there. But at some point, the protests stop. We start to get back to quote-unquote regular life, though that's been anything but this year. And then there needs to be the next step. And I believe that's what you're talking about, the action. So what is with this committee? You said it was a great conversation over the weekend. What were some of the things that you talked about as far as actionable things in NBA cities to start helping?
Well, I think, you know, the interaction between our communities and police and law enforcement agencies is, you know, a huge beginning. And how do we figure out, how do we bridge that gap? And erase some of the tension that's creating the situations that we keep seeing. You know, how do we impact the education? How do we impact training? How do we impact recruitment when it comes to law enforcement? You know, those are discussions that we've had. Working with, you know, national groups that have local chapters that are already tied in, you know, to the community that have, you know, webs to political leaders that have webs to law enforcement agencies, you know, lawyers who understand, you know, the legislation that needs to be passed or changed to hold people accountable. You know, those are all things that we've discussed, you know, and, you know, the education of people and getting people to register to vote and understanding, you know, how important the local elections are. I think we spend a ton of time focusing on the national elections, but an understanding that, you know, it's the local elections and those governing forces that make the decisions that impact, you know, our communities the most. And, you know, I don't think, you know, we don't pay that. So educating ourselves on who's running, helping educate other people on who's running. And again, we're not attempting to play politics here. Our biggest thing is how we impact and how we actually create change. And it's the change for the good of all people. You know, this isn't a political issue anymore. This is an issue about human beings and us, you know, finally deciding to stand together for the greater good and doing our civic duty to protect one another.
You know, it's interesting as we're talking to J.B. Bickerstaff, head coach of the Cavs. The Cavs have sort of been through these conversations in recent years on several occasions. Kevin Love, as a member of the Cavs, was one of very few NBA players that openly addressed his struggles with mental health, and other players followed, but he sort of got that conversation going. And J.B., it's earlier this season, you as a team had to go through some things when then head coach John Beilein used the word thugs that has some connotations to it. He thought he had said slugs and going through this tape, and you guys as a team had to work through that. How has all of that in any way, shape, or form sort of framed what you guys are dealing with now on a larger societal scale?
What it's done is given us an opportunity to open dialogue. You know, we had a call with our guys over the weekend, and, you know, we were able to openly discuss, because of the level of trust, because we've gone through these things, you know, where we stand and how we feel. And to me, that was extremely powerful. And I think it's something that people should be aware of. You know, we had guys on that call who, through all the success and all the popularity, who still feel extremely uncomfortable when in the presence of police. And that just goes to show you that this thing reaches everywhere. And being able to have that conversation is a, you know, a direct result of the leadership of the guys on the team. You know, Kevin Love has stepped out there, you know, with the battle with mental health and how do we advance that? And that's not easy to do, you know, and he was very vocal on our call, you know, in wanting to help and asking, you know, how exactly he can help. And I think, again, if you're not comfortable and you're not willing to step out on a limb because of the trust that you have for the group, you know, you won't be able to do those things. So, you know, again, I go back to this and, you know, I want to make it extremely clear, like, our organization as a whole has been on the forefront of, you know, diversity and inclusion long before this. And, you know, again, you know, on Friday we had one call. On yesterday we had another call that included everybody in our organization to discuss how we wanted to move forward and what plan of action we were putting in place. So we're very fortunate from that standpoint, and we have the support from the top down to continue to fight for what we believe is right.
JB, we appreciate the time this morning. Thank you so much for being part of the conversation with us.
Thank you guys very much. You guys stay safe.
Golic and Wingo.
Let's not expect too much. There's only one person out there that's expecting way too much out of this guy too early. We know who that is. It's his father.
Look, there are times in our lives when things aren't going well and you're trying to make sense of things, and there's always someone in your life that you can count on to sort of put you on the right place at the right track at the right time. We all have those people in our lives. And our next guest, for all of those reasons, is that person for me. And I feel like I haven't talked to him in forever, forgive me, but it's really good to have Herm Edwards on with us, Arizona State football coach. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Rhodey, and miss you guys, man. And this is some – these times right now in America, it's kind of ironic, Rhodey, because 1968, April 4th, Dr. King was assassinated. And I can remember the riots that took place and all the unrest that was taking place. I was 14 years old and sitting at the table and visiting with my father and trying to – and asking him, why is all this – what is all this, right? And now all of a sudden you spin it forward 52 years later. I got two daughters, Gabrielle and Vivian, 14 and 13, and I'm sitting at the supper table and they're asking me, Daddy, why is this all happening? Why did the police do that to that man? It's amazing. It just really is. And when you think about, you know, justice, Lady Justice, she has a blindfold on and she holds two scales and a sword. And at times, people of color have just felt like it's been an unbalanced system. And the justice system has some cracks in it. And until we're able to fix it, we run into these problems. And now the young generation is kind of going through what I went through in 1968 when I watched it all happen and was involved in it. You know, was involved in watching our country go through these growing pains. And the voices that haven't been heard, they want to be heard. And it's a shame because now with the violence and the looting, it's hijacking the message. And you don't want that to take place. That should never take place. But that's kind of what's happened in the last couple of nights.
It certainly has. Herm Edwards is with us. And for those that don't know and just know Herm as the football player or the coach or for 9 years, one of the great co-workers and teammates we ever had here at ESPN, Herm's story is fascinating. His father was a World War II veteran, African-American man who ended up marrying a German woman. a white woman, and there were places, Herm, when your father came back, that they could not live. They were not allowed to live in certain states because of an interracial marriage. So you've been about this, and you've dealt with this your entire life. What message do you want to get to people that maybe are finally seeing and understanding for the first time things that you have had to deal with since the day you were born?
Well, it's one thing to have a conversation, but who are you having a conversation with? This is an uncomfortable conversation for a lot of people. And I think this is where, you know, sports is so unique, the huddle. And when you think about a huddle in football or in life, people come from all different walks of life and different beliefs. But they come in there and they have this conversation of what it's going to take to be successful, not only as a football team, but in life. And I think until we can get groups together and have a conversation, communicate, then we always run to our corners and say, this is what it is. We got to get together. We got to huddle up as a country and talk about these issues so we can progress.
Herm, I'm interested in some of those conversations. My mind immediately goes to your players, the young men that you are coaching and leading right now. What have some of those conversations been like with that group?
Well, you know, right now, because we haven't been obviously together as a team, and we're going to get together on the 15th, but I sent out some messages and about their situation. And they're all, you know, the good thing about our players is that it's a pretty tight group. And you can see some of them, you know, some of the texts I get from them, they say, Coach, you know, what should we do? And I said, hey, look, you just got to look at it from the perspective of you guys get to change this country. You know, you have an opportunity to do this for your kids. Because here's the thing about, you know, protesting and progress. It doesn't happen overnight. It really doesn't. It's going to benefit their kids. And that's what you got to look at. It's not going to happen. They're going to turn light switch off. Oh, we're going to change all this stuff. No, it's going to take time for it to change. But I think because of the emotion we have right now as a country, people are starting to have this conversation. And you got to have this conversation, to be quite honest, at the supper table with your kids, if you have young kids, and tell them this is not right. America's better than this. Guys, this is unbelievable to watch. I mean, we got the National Guard. This is crazy. This is like some third world country. This is America. We're way better than this.
So, Herm, you, again, as Trey said, and you've talked about this in the 60s, we're talking over 50-some years of this, and you've seen it time and time and time again, now with your kids, now with kids you are coaching who are growing up to be young men. Why will it and how can it be different this time?
Well, you're hoping that the people that are in position of power that can make change, make change. And it's not talked about. It's done. And it's a shame because, you know, the police officers now are getting labeled, and they shouldn't be labeled. It's like anything else. There's some guys in there that made some bad decisions. And all of a sudden, hopefully, we're not saying that police are bad because they're not. But that's the problem. You know, we catch a glimpse of it, and then we want to paint the full brush of everyone, and that's really not what it is. But it's people like that. You can't allow them to be a part of your team. You just can't. They can't. You know this. There are certain teams you're on. You play on a bunch of teams. I play on some teams, and there's certain guys, they don't fit. Well, you got to get them out. Because when they make a mistake, it's not a penalty. Somebody could die.
Yeah, we've seen that far too often as Herm Edwards is with us. Herm, how much communication have you had with your players during this entire process? I mean, I guess from an overall perspective, not only in the light of what's happened in the last week to 10 days or so, but what's been going on in the midst of the pandemic. How much have you been able to sort of talk to them about how we should be and how they should be using their platform?
Well, you know, telling them to make sure that they understand the subject. And don't let their emotions get the best of them. Think through the process of how you feel. And a lot of them are trying to figure it out, you know, because they're watching this and going, okay. And you know, here's the shame of it all. The incident that happened in Minnesota, why you see it all of a sudden breaking out in all these other cities, because we have to come to this turn that there is some racism in America. The problem with it now it's getting exposed because now it's on film. It's on film for everybody to see. Right? And so before, maybe police were doing this in certain areas of the country and it wasn't on film. Well, you see these outbursts all over because probably in some communities they said, this happened to us too. Maybe the guy didn't die, but maybe it was some police brutality in certain areas of the country that was never on tape. It's on tape now. And it's hard to watch. It is hard to watch.
Yeah, hard to watch for 9 minutes.
Sure is.
Of George Floyd. Herm, I said this on the last day your last day on NFL Live. You're never too old to be coached, and I appreciate you spending some time with us and coaching us up this morning. Always good to talk to you, my friend. My best to you and the family.
You guys as well. Love you guys. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Herm.
Thanks, Herm.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.